I'm going to call this meeting of the Clinton Township Board of Education to order. The time is 7:30. In accordance with the provisions of the New Jersey Open Public Meetings Act, Chapter 231, laws of 1975, adequate notice of this meeting was provided through public notice on January 8th, 2020. Faxing to three newspapers designated by the board, Hunterdon County Democrat, Hunterdon Review, and Express Times. Posting on the district website, the main bulletin board in the administration offices, and in each Clinton Township school. Faxing to the clerk of Clinton Township. May I please have a roll call vote?
Ms. Brennan?
Present.
Dr. Brasher?
Here.
Ms. Brooks?
Here.
Ms. Emery?
Here.
Ms. Grant?
Here.
Dr. Grantham?
Here.
Mr. Hornick?
Here.
Mrs. Kaltenbach?
Here.
Dr. Rihamaki?
Here.
Thank you. Dr. Grantham, would you please do the pledge for us?
Sure.
Thank you.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Dr. Yamaki, would you be the process guardian, please?
Yes.
Thank you. So we are going to have a presentation by Mr. Mazuka, who is our supervisor of building and grounds, because we had a conversation at our last meeting about the HVAC and all that.
Can you use the mic?
Yes, if you wouldn't mind.
John, you want to move that up so we can see you, the whole part?
Yeah, thank
part
you. Perfect.
So, addressing the HVAC at Patrick McGarren School. The question was, I believe, why can't the project be broken into? Do it in two separate stages. And the reason why it cannot be is because the rooms are heated and air conditioned by Airedales. So if you take them, they have to be taken out first. So once you take them out, you're gonna leave holes in the walls because there's vents that go through the walls that has to be patched with masonry. And then a question was, well, can you put temporary air conditioning in there over the summer? You can, but each air conditioner in the window has to be wired separately, has to be a home run. So that would cost money for an electrician to do that. And then the temporary AC units that would have to be purchased to put into the windows, that's an added expense on top of that. And then you have to have heat. So the air conditioners will not supply the heat for the room. So then you're in a conundrum because you have to have heat. If things happen and you have to heat the rooms, you can't heat the rooms. So that's why you have to do it all at once, because those units are self-contained. So when they come out, the other units have to go up on the roof and then put in with the ductwork. The other question was, how come this isn't happening this year? Well, frankly, because of the high demand for all the units. Apparently, a lot of school districts are upgrading and doing this. And to get those units there, it would be way into the summer, and it wouldn't allow the work to be completed in a timely fashion. So the school would probably have to be closed, you know, before it starts up. So that's why that's not happening this year. Any questions more with that?
So
If I may, it sounds like you're recommending that we delay the project? That's your recommendation?
I can't see any reason for doing it if we know that it's not going to get completed before the end of the summer. I think it would just cause a lot of headache and heartache. The school being, in a half-finished state, and it could go, we don't know how long it could go into the school year before it's completed. Is it going to happen? Yes. But apparently, all the ordering of the HVAC equipment, we're not able to get that equipment in a timely manner. So that's what's the holdup.
What would be your when would be your recommendation of trying to start this so that if we push it back to start for next year?
Well, knowing what we know now, I would start the bidding way ahead of time to assure that we're going to have those air conditioning units delivered on the site and ready to be craned up on the roof when the time comes.
Yeah, we would start to talk to the architect probably October, November. Mm-hmm.
John, what's the length of time right now to get a device, one of the units made? How far out, if we were ordered today, how far out would we be?
You mean if they ordered them
yep.
now?
Mm-hmm.
We wouldn't get the units until like way into the summer. I can't give you an exact date.
The only reason I'm asking is because to get a sense of that
mm-hmm.
before we say, oh, we'll start talking in October, November, because we may actually have to have those conversations sooner than later to get in the queue.
Right.
So I'm just trying to understand if we have a sense of how far out the queue is, right?
Mm-hmm.
So if we place an order today, where would we be so that we knew when to contact the architect and when we would actually have to place the order so that you would have it in plenty of time so you could fix it, complete it next summer.
I could definitely find that out for you and get back to you.
I think when we were meeting with Tracy, the architect, she said the normal lead time was 18 to 20 weeks, but with the delays due to the high demand, you can't really predict how far and starting late, we would be in the back of the queue. Does
mm-hmm.
that sound right?
Yes.
Right, and all I'm saying is, how
right.
far is the queue?
So,
right,
I think you need to anticipate at least a good 4 to 5 months lead time for ordering.
That's fine, but I think we should have a little bit more so that we don't miss that window again for next summer. That's all.
I absolutely agree.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Any additional questions?
Wait, what is the cost of waiting? Is there a cost, like we'll have to buy window units or?
The units that are in place now have the capacity to cool. They're not always the most reliable, but they still do work. So as long as we can keep patching them with duct tape and Band-Aids, we can get through to next year.
And these units, like, how much do they go up every year? Like, is there an average on how much more they're going to cost to order next year versus what was planned to buy them this year?
There's always a chance that, things are going to go up, but I think it's nominal. It wouldn't be, a crazy amount of money, like thousands of dollars, if that's what you need.
So just to confirm, there are units currently installed in each of those classrooms?
There are the ones that need to be upgraded?
Yes.
Yes.
But if we were to start the project, and this is just curiosity, you had said that the air conditioners would have to have its own outlet or its own source voltage?
Yeah, it's called a designated circuit.
But currently they aren't on that designated circuit.
Right. There's outlets in the room. But unfortunately, you can't plug an air conditioner into an outlet that shares other items. The plug has to be designated just for the air conditioner.
But is that how it's currently set up?
There are no window units.
There's no
rooms.
Window units.
Yeah.
Got it.
There are window units in rooms.
That's what I was.
At the school, but I don't believe those rooms that are affected by the upgrade have the air conditioners.
Got it, okay.
I think that's all. Thank you so much.
And then we're going to ask John about this.
Oh, I'm sorry. Never mind. One more thing.
If you could, we did have some questions last at our work meeting. There were some questions. We just need a little further clarification. The diagram is great, but if you could explain the detail of the sidewalk project here at the middle school.
Okay. If you look at the picture, I tried to highlight where the walkway is going to go. One of the parking spaces in the side lot is going to be lined off so it can't be used. And those sidewalks are going to be, the curbs are going to be cut out on each island all the way down to where the flagpole is. And they're going to be dug out, all the dirt's going to be removed, and it's going to be 4 inches of stone packed down, and then they're going to put their forms in, and then they're going to pour the cement for the walkways. And then they have to replace the curbing that they cut out. Because the curbs that are there now, they have to cut them further away from where the walkway is going to be so they can make a slope, because you can't have a sharp cut. And that's why it costs that amount. That's actually a better price than what we had previously, which was $22,000. I went to a different contractor and I got another quote on it. And I think that is a really good price for the amount of work that has to be done. It's funny that it seemed like a design flaw or someone missed it when they built the school. And it's definitely a safety issue, and I feel that that would definitely be beneficial to the students and the faculty.
Will it be ADA compliant?
Yes, absolutely. It's going to be inspected by the township also.
I have a quick question. From the diagram, it looks like the sidewalk empties into the first parking lot slot.
Yes.
Will you negate that slot with some painting and?
Yes, there's going to be painting. That parking space there now, you're not going to be able to use it anymore.
Okay.
So people can walk freely, you know, to and from the school into the parking lot.
And do you have intent on putting a sign there that says, "Do not park"? Just because people have been parking there forever, it just might be normal to just whip around the corner and go in there?
I can absolutely do that. Yes.
It might, just because it's been there since the opening of the school, I can see people just parking there.
I agree.
John, that price also includes painting lines on the walkways, correct? And
yes, painting lines, the whole turnkey.
Any additional questions? Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. We're going to move on to reporting the superintendent of schools.
Okay.
One second.
Okay, thank you. So for my report this evening, enrollment this evening is 1,221 students, holding steady. For the suspension report, we have one day in-school suspension. And on our HIB reports, we have two at the first reading and two at the second reading. So a couple of interesting things. I'd like to first start out with thanking the foundation for their grant of $1,500, allowing Patrick McGarren School to purchase the sensory walk decals, which will be installed in the hallway at Patrick McGarren. We have a similar walkway at Spruce Run. It's a lot of fun. The kids and the adults, honestly, myself included, enjoy going through the sensory walk. It's an interactive walk. It's very colorful, and all enjoy it. So thank you to the foundation, and that grant will be on the agenda this evening. As part of district goal number one, social-emotional learning was the focus of the Global Day of Play, which I had mentioned last month. The report was that students and staff had a great time. I know all of the students went home exhausted. Both at Patrick McGarren and Round Valley, the students enjoyed participating in the Global Day of Play. They enjoyed games, puzzles, and building forts. They had a lot of fun. Also, the township, the school district here, we had been in the news this past week for a couple of exciting events. The first to be taking place right here at this middle school on this stage behind us. Cinderella will be performed by our students, over 70 students, on March 12th, 13th, and 14th. And please go to the website for more information. It will be a wonderful show. They always do put on a terrific show. This Friday, February 28th, marks the 10th year for the Clinton Township Schools District in raising over $350,000 for cancer research. The Relay for Life will take place here on this stage and in this room and in this building through the hallways on Friday the 28th. Doors opening at 6 with a special treat, Jim Barone as Elvis. So for more information, you can also go to the website. It will be a fun evening. I just wanted to mention during the cold and flu season, everyone's very aware and, you know, hearing things in the news about cold, flus, viruses, that we have been in touch with the health department and the CDC. They're just recommending good hygiene, hand washing practices, and the district is taking care of our normal cleaning routines for cleaning and disinfecting. No restrictions have been placed on field trips or sports participation, so I just wanted to mention that. And that is my report for tonight.
Looking for a motion?
Motion.
Looking for a second?
Second.
Roll call. Or, I'm sorry, just any discussion, questions?
In terms of the HIB reports, it seems like we've had fewer this year. Is that part of the impact of changing our policy to give more discretion to the schools?
I would say yes. We have used our discretionary implementation on a number of occasions, which is still a reporting process, but does not make it to the level of a HIB report. But yes, it has. It has helped.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Roll call vote.
Dr. Brasher.
Yes.
Ms. Brooks.
Yes.
Ms. Emery.
Yes.
Ms. Grant.
Yes.
Dr. Grantham.
Yes.
Mr. Hornick.
Yes.
Ms. Kaltenbach.
Yes.
Dr. Rahimaki.
Yes.
Ms. Brenner.
Yes. Now we will move on to the first recognition of the public. The first recognition of the public is for any commentary or questions on agenda items only. If you have any questions or comments on any issues beyond tonight's agenda, if you could please wait until the second recognition of the public at the end. If anybody in the audience would like to address the board on agenda items only, please come up to the microphone and state your name and address. Each person will have up to 3 minutes. We will attempt to answer all questions. However, in the event that we are unable to answer them, we will follow up. This comment section will be limited to 30 minutes.
Hello, friends. Good to see everybody. Kevin Malloy, David Post Road, Annandale. I have a question tonight on motion action item 20FF126 to approve the distribution of the 2019 extraordinary aid amount in $500,000 and non-public transportation aid accounts payable for retroactive salary payments. According to the NJDOA, the Extraordinary Aid Program, I'm reading here, provides additional aid to districts with classified students who have certain expenses over a set threshold pursuant to NJSA 18A7F-55. So with that said, and with the guidance from the NJDOA, I'm just curious how this board arrived at a decision to give over $500,000 of extraordinary aid that used to be or should be earmarked for students with IEPs, AIDS, and their education to retroactive pay for salary. I'd further ask, is this retroactive pay going to include retroactive pay for teachers who left the district before the expiration of the contract to which you are applying this retro aid? It would seem to me that you're paying the mortgage with a credit card.
Regarding the payment of retro and to whom it would be paid, that's part of negotiations, so unfortunately we're not able to address that with you specifically currently in public session. It's a negotiation issue. Regarding the extraordinary aid, The way extraordinary aid works is that you incur expenses throughout the school year, say the 2019 school year. In May of that year, you apply for extraordinary aid as a reimbursement for your extraordinary expenses, as well as your non-public transportation, which is a much smaller amount, but it works the same way. You are not given, the district doesn't know what the extraordinary aid award will be until after the budget is finished and approved, because you're not even applying until May. So you go ahead and budget for all of your extraordinary expenses that you referenced for special ed children with IEPs, et cetera, using your general fund, and you know, meaning your tax levy, your state aid, you know, federal funds, et cetera, because you budget without considering extraordinary aid because you don't know how much it's going to be. So all of the services that are needed or required are in the budget. So when you find out what your award will be for extraordinary aid and then receive the money for it, you're able to distribute it through the budget. And you're allowed to distribute it anywhere in the budget because you may have short budgeted, if you will, anywhere in the budget in order to meet your extraordinary special ed expenses, because they're always a priority. So the practice is to put the money where you need it, and that's not just here, that's, you know, anywhere when you get your extraordinary payment. Gotcha.
So
that's the first part. I'll get to your second part of your question.
Just, I can assure you on that, full disclosure, I ran the F&F committee on this board for 6 to 8 years, so I got it. So yeah, sorry.
So you understand how that works. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Okay, and then the second part of your question, I don't know how you worded it, about, what did you say, paid?
Well, I'm just curious.
Short-term,
I understand the extraordinary aid concept, but I'm curious.
Okay,
this district had, I believe, 8 to 12 new students with IEPs come in. That requires, or 25 students with new IEPs come in, 12 aides. Aides are about $40,000 a pop. 12 times 40,000 is $480,000. You got $511,000 you're using to give RetroPay.
But I can tell you that all of those expenses were covered with money that was already in the budget. So it may have been moved from another section that had items budgeted that we could do without, perhaps, or that weren't as big of a priority as the extraordinary aid. It's special ed always has to come first. If there's a need in an IEP to be compliant and legal, and feel free, Michelle, to jump in anytime,
mm-hmm.
You have to budget money there. Mm-hmm. And if that means taking it away from, you know, direct instruction for regular ed or field trips or whatever, then that's what you have to do. That said, the extraordinary aid money that's going to retro is not going to be a fix for the future. It's a fix for the past. So we have 3 years that retro will need to be paid. And based on current negotiations and where things seem to be leading, the amount of retro that was set aside in the accounts payable line, the 10-1-21, I think it is, was not adequate to cover the anticipated expenses. So in order to beef that up, to make sure that the retro amounts for 3 years, because now we're in a third year, not just two, there would be adequate funds to cover expected retro without a shortfall, that would have to come out of next year's budget. The extraordinary aid was never allocated. It was realized as revenue, it was accrued, it was booked, it was put into cash, but it was never distributed. So it was basically sitting as fund balance. And you have to distribute it out. And at the time, the shortfall, the place that we needed to plug a hole, if you will, was to have enough retro to cover the anticipated retro payments, which is why it's being moved there. And I'd also like to point out, this is being done the end of February, and we've met all of our extraordinary aid expenses through the year thus far by managing the funds that are already within their original general budget.
Gotcha. So you guys are being generous with your time, so just have a couple of quick follow-ups. So the retro then is for a prior settled contract, right?
No.
So, but you said it's subject to negotiations, but here you are putting a number in a public agenda.
No.
I'm confused.
No. That number is not a number that matches or sets. It's to plug an obvious deficiency. If the number comes in lower than that, then that money will be reallocated someplace else. But we don't want to be short of what we need to be either.
I understand.
So it's not an exact amount by any means. It's just based on what we're hearing in negotiations to make sure that the district is not at risk of having to shortfall next year's budget because we weren't prepared for the past.
Gotcha. Gotcha. So then you're assuming, we're hoping, I guess, as a district and taxpayers, that we don't get another 25 kids with IEPs next year?
That's always the hope, I think. But
okay. Thank you very much. I appreciate your candor.
Thank you.
May I follow up on that, or is this not the time to do that?
No, I don't believe we can talk about that right
now. Okay.
Seeing no additional comments, I'm going to close the floor for the public comment section, and we are going to move on to the report of the school business administrator.
Okay, so we have a motion to approve line item transfers for the period ending February 24th, 2020. We have a motion to approve payment of bills from January 28th to February 24th in the amount of $2,424,691.25. We are looking to approve the calendar for next school year as presented. We have some minutes from January 13th and 27th to approve, and our next meeting dates will be March 9th, which is work session for Committee of the Whole, and March 16th.
Looking for a motion for the business administration
report.
Cotton Ball. Looking for a second?
Second.
Any discussions?
I have some questions. I looked online today. I was unable to locate the bill list, the meeting minutes, the calendar, the contract for Duff and Phelps, the job description, policy 011, and the creation of the treasurer's position. And I was just wondering where online that was. I'm sure it was online and I just couldn't find it, but I'm just curious, the documents that correspond to this particular agenda, where would I find that?
Were you not able to get into your Google folder?
No, I could, but I was looking on the website where we post the agenda.
So, if I may answer.
Yes, ma'am.
So, statutorily, you're not required to post the supplemental materials, and because they're subject to change until they're approved, they'll be posted with the minutes as opposed to with the agenda.
So, if members of the public want to look at the agenda and want to look at the bills list and the meeting minutes and the calendar and all these other things, they don't have the. We've posted stuff before.
Once it's approved, then they can.
We've posted stuff, but we've posted stuff as a board before to allow the public to look at things. And so I would like to ask it in the future, even though it's not approved, since we make reference to it in the agenda, that we allow the public to view it, right? I mean, if we want to allow it to be transparent and accountable, we should let the public look at these specific things, and then this way they can comment appropriately. I mean, because they're operating in the blind, sitting there or sitting at home, not being able to look at this, and we know the agenda doesn't give all the particulars. So I would ask that in the future, if there are things that need to be referenced, like the things I mentioned before, that we could also
definitely take that into consideration.
Into consideration or no?
Well, I believe previously we've not posted.
Not everything.
Not everything, but most of it. Yes.
Why not post everything?
What we can post, yes.
Right. Is there anything in the agenda that we can't post?
I believe previously we've not posted our minutes until they've been approved.
But right now, is there anything other than the minutes that we can't approve?
No, that's what I'm saying. I'm not saying no. I'm saying that along with what our previous practice has been, I have no problem with posting.
Previous practice, nonetheless, I'm asking moving forward if we're going to be transparent and to the public, right? This is why we changed the Board of the Whole, that we should allow people to see what we're working on.
Do you have any guidance on this?
So I was asking.
Yes, please.
So I'll divide the type of items we're talking about into three categories. So there are the things that for legal and or procedural reasons we don't post now and would never post. I think those are easy to identify. Then there are the things that we don't post now, but there's no legal impediment to posting, so that's a decision of the board. And then there's the third category, which is the things that there's no prohibition against posting, but they may not be available to post, such as the things that come to the superintendent or business administrator's attention after the agenda is posted, mm-hmm. or perhaps a personnel issue that is not going to be posted because it's going to be discussed with the board in executive session first, and to avoid embarrassing a candidate that may not be successful, you wouldn't post that, even though there's nothing legally that would prevent you from doing that. So I think the first and third categories should remain status quo. The middle category is up to the discretion of the board. I think one of the examples was the bill list, mm-hmm. right? So a bill list like that, that's typically available to the public before a board meeting. I don't know if there are any other specific examples.
Just job descriptions we've posted before.
Right, so a draft of a job description, a draft of a policy, and the reason why, and there is some case law about this relating to the Open Public Meetings Act, is that if there's going to be a public comment section before the board acts, the public will have an opportunity to see that and comment. So again, that's a discretionary decision available to the board, but as in terms of the question that I was asked, I think more often than not, those are the things that are posted. But there may be things that legally you could post, but for a whole host of practical reasons wouldn't make it. But something like a bill list, something like a draft policy or job description, those things are typically available to the public.
Would the calendar be one of those things as well? The school calendar?
The proposed school calendar?
Yeah.
Again, that is typically a matter of considerable public discussion. I can recall at least one occasion in recent years where I know that was posted in advance because it led to exactly what I'm talking about, a very vigorous public discussion about the draft calendar.
Mm-hmm.
So again, those are typically the sort of things that are, although in draft form, available to the public before the board acts, because they're the sort of things that on which the public is typically going to comment.
Thank you. Are you implying that the school, the draft calendar was not posted?
I didn't see it. Doesn't mean it wasn't there. That's why I was asking.
Because my understanding was it was up, it was on the...
This agenda?
It was with the one from the our work session.
Right. I'm just saying if we're going to publish an agenda with things that we're going to vote on, right, people have a right to see some of the things that Mr. Gaglia already was talking about.
Yeah.
Should we have a motion to that effect? I mean, you're making a request. Would you like a motion so that it's more than just one board member making that request? It's the board voting on it?
I don't know if we need to do that, Mr. Gaglia. Do we have to do that?
My suggestion is that, generally speaking, because it involves the agenda, if the board president were to direct the superintendent or board secretary to do it, it's done. So you can do it by way of motion, but typically the agenda is designed to be a collaborative process between the president and the superintendent and business administrator. And so if that's okay with the president, then that's what you need.
Okay. We'll work on that. Any other questions or discussion? Okay, we're going to move to a roll call vote. Do we have a motion again?
Oh, we did, okay.
Okay.
Dr. Brasher?
Yes.
Ms. Brooks?
Yes.
Ms. Emery?
Yes.
Ms. Grant?
Hold on 1 second, please. Yes on everything except for action item 20BA-20.
You're abstaining from that?
It's a no.
Dr. Grantham?
Yes.
Mr. Hornick?
Yes.
Ms. Kaltenbach?
Yes.
Dr. Rahimaki?
Yes.
Ms. Brennan?
Yes. We are going to move on to facilities and finance. We have 14 action items for facilities and finance. They include professional development and staff travel, donation of binders to Round Valley, a donation from ExxonMobil for a science assembly, approval of our comprehensive maintenance plan for the 1920 school year, allocating our 2019 extraordinary aid and non-public transportation aid, and a donation from the Clinton Township Foundation of Education of $1,500 for the Century Walk at PMG, which Dr. Cohn referenced earlier. Thank you. I'm looking for a motion on FF116 through 20FF129.
Motion.
Second?
Second.
Discussion?
Yeah, I think this is where my question comes in.
Yes.
Okay. So I note that this is listed under facilities and finance and not under negotiations. Therefore, it is a facilities and finance matter.
Sorry, which one?
126.
20FF126. Correct?
I believe it's in the sense of
it's moving monies. Okay, so this should have been discussed with the whole board, correct?
It was on the agenda for the meeting that we had on February 13th.
Did we discuss this at the working meeting?
It was not brought up by...
It's on the agenda, it wasn't discussed.
Okay. My apologies. I think that I missed the significance of this during the working session. You know, as the parents of a child who needed a school aid and special ed, I am concerned that this is robbing Peter to pay Paul. And if we do end up with another 25 students, as we know this district does attract families who have children with special needs because of our positive reputation, that we could end up in September being short of the money that we need to provide students with support. And I would like to know, I understand that at the moment this money is sitting there doing nothing, right? And that we do need money to pay the retroactive pay. But what I would like to know is, what is the plan to cover the possibility that once again next year we end up with 15 to 25 children with special needs, or that 15 or 25 of the students that we currently have on becoming more mature suddenly need additional support?
So when you're finishing out your fiscal year budget, so in July or end of June rolling into July, there are limits on the amount of money you're allowed to hold over, and any amount of fund balance or excess funds, excess surplus that you didn't spend from your budget can go to reserve funds. It can go to excess surplus, which we already have. We're already at the amount that we need. We're short, I think, $6,000 or some small amount, but not enough for it to be a significant concern. And or you can give relief, tax relief. So in terms of talking about September, this year's extraordinary aid isn't that you can't carry it over for special ed needs next year. That's not how the budget works. The auditor doesn't, you're not, they tell you what you need to do with your excess surplus. They give you a choice. You can put it in capital reserve, maintenance reserve, if you had an emergency reserve, but you can't just, it's not like a savings, like where you would just be able to keep it like in the bank. That's not how school funds work. So that's to answer the September question. If we had needs this year and we needed funds, that retro money is still there. It's still in our board secretary's report. It's just sitting on a line. Just as I transferred it in, I could transfer it out. It's in the same bank account. I would need approval to transfer it out at that point because we have already allocated it in. But it's not like funds that can't be touched if we needed them. So it's not like we're spending it right now and it's gone. If we were to take and move the extraordinary aid money just for the flow of the money onto special ed lines, then we would have large available balances on those special ed lines because money's already been put there to encumber our needs. So we could move it there so that it flows from extraordinary aid to extraordinary aid lines, but then I would just be taking the excess money on those lines that's available and moving it into accounts payable to pay the retro. So it's all in the same bank account. It's just where you allocate it. Could we have allocated it to special ed lines where we don't need the money right now? Yes, but then we would have had to take money from other lines in order to cover the retro. Does that make sense?
So we have funds that are specifically designated as basically reserve funds.
Correct.
So rather than take money from the reserve fund this looks like to cover the shortfall in retroactive pay.
You're not allowed to do that. So you have maintenance reserve, and you may only use maintenance reserve for maintenance expenses, the 261, 262, 263-ish lines. That's the only thing you can use it for. And then the capital reserve, you can only take that out with public approval. So it has to be through like a referendum or as part of the budget. You can't take it to cover retro or special ed costs. That's not allowed by statute. The law doesn't allow you to take it out of there for anything other than maintenance or capital reserve or capital expenses.
I'm the first to admit that finance is not my area of expertise, but I'm not comfortable with this. Just to make you aware, this feels like you're stealing from the kids who have special needs and in advance for next year. That's what it feels like. That's what it reads like. You know, maybe that's not the case financially, but it that's what it looks like.
And if we were doing this in September, which is the normal time that that it happens when the money comes in, it probably would have gone to beef up tuition lines for out-of-district placement, transportation for out-of-district placement, but we're into March. So all of those expenses have already been encumbered, and the likelihood of us getting, you know, a big wave of special ed needs at this point isn't nearly as strong as it was back in September. And honestly, where we needed the funds was the retro line.
Yeah, I'm just...
I hear what you're saying. I'm understanding what you're saying.
I'm looking ahead. You know, we're approving an additional salary of $40,000 for a special education teacher, plus, of course, benefits. And then we have, I believe on here also, there's a student's tuition for an out-of-district school that is something like $126,000, which is
right.
A big chunk of that $500,000 we're talking about.
But those funds are already encumbered. They're already set aside.
She's talking about the future.
All right.
I just want to make sure I understand you correct. The teacher, the special education teacher that's in the agenda is not creating a new position.
No, I understand
okay.
that.
I just want to make sure.
Yeah, I know that.
So I have a series of questions relative to that particular action item as well. Classically, over the last few years, we have received somewhere between $100,000 and $150,000 in reimbursement for extraordinary aid. We spend significantly more than that, and that's what we've been getting. This year's $500,000 and change is above and beyond what we've normally received. So I want to point that out because I'm not comfortable with this either. If this money is going to be used for retroactive pay, that means that salaries will be retroactively increased. And so if this is not part of the budget already, $500,000 is above and beyond the 2% cap, right? So where's the money going to come from to fund the retroactive pay that adds to next year's budget when it falls above $500,000? So if cap is roughly $460,000, and this money hasn't been added to the budget yet, correct? If I understand that correctly, it hasn't been added to the budget yet. How do we make up for putting retro backwards, forwards, when our cap is at 2%? Where is that money going to come from?
I don't think we're looking at it the same way. The amount put away for extraordinary aid, the amount that was set aside for extraordinary aid in, let's say, for retro, let's say in 2018, was, I'm sure, based on whatever negotiations were looking like at the time. And anything over and above that was either spent, moved into capital reserve, maintenance reserve, or used as tax relief, because at the end of the year, that's what has to happen with your excess funds. So it's not to say that there wasn't enough money to have put away more retro to cover that within the normal budget. It just didn't happen.
No, I'm sorry, I don't think you understand. If we're going to allocate this money to retroactive pay,
right,
that increases the salary of the staff by whatever this is, the 18,000 plus the 500.
Okay.
Those two figures add up to more than our $500,000 2% cap for next year.
Okay.
So where does the money come from for next year? It's above all the allowable cap.
The retro money has nothing to do with next year because we're putting away money.
But salaries that, increase, correct?
But we're putting money away that wasn't adequately put away previously,
okay,
based on current.
I get that. That's this year. That's this year. But what this represents is that the money that was budgeted to pay projected salaries and retro, which, you know, even though it was assumed that it would be 2 years, and now we're talking two and more. Okay, does this simply represent that time difference, or is there, because if it represents an increase in the amount that's being offered to the teachers, has it been looked at whether the amount we will have to pay in addition next year is within the 2% cap?
Yes.
It has been looked at.
So the difference between what will be offered is covered in addition to retro, but how do we do that?
We're getting dangerously close to discussing negotiations.
Right, but we're not
public,
over yet.
So.
I don't know where the money's going to come from. And how do you cover it for next year? Because you don't have the $500K plus the $18,000.
I understand, but your questions are getting too close to the negotiation status for me to be comfortable discussing it at this point.
But we haven't crossed the line. So where's the money going to come from?
Vito,
your advice.
Our line is.
So this is difficult for me because I don't know the answer to these questions. So I don't know if the answers to the questions are going to be close to one another. I don't know what they would be. But to the extent this is based on some negotiation strategy or something that has been discussed with the CTEA, I think that the appropriate way to handle this is to discuss in executive session how it relates to those discussions. I'm assuming that there were such discussions because I don't know, but I'm concerned if that was the case in terms of what the answers would be if they're given publicly.
So we can do this at another time once an MOA. We don't have to do this now, right, when there's more explanation for everybody to understand the full MOA. We don't have to do this now. There's no statute that governs us to do it now.
MOA, I'm sorry. What do you mean?
Memorandum of Agreement?
With the teachers
union. With the teachers union.
Sure, we could keep it. Sure.
I mean, because then everybody would have all the information and might feel more comfortable with it, because right now we lack understanding of where the money's going to go in the future and how it gets covered. And it just seems like the cart's before the horse.
But if I may, you have said this is all easily undone if we do not need this in that particular line item. So it's not changing anything about our negotiating position. It's not changing anything about our financial situation. It is just moving money from one line item to another line item with no other consequence besides that.
But there's no consequence,
correct,
if we don't move it, because it can stay where it's
actually,
at
no,
until
that,
the MOA is
that,
done.
That actually is not correct. You, when you get your extraordinary aid, you have to get a board resolution as to where you're distributing mm-hmm. the extraordinary aid. And when we have CUSAC, which is going to start in November, we may not get a point or indicator point for that if we didn't follow the process and have the...
But that's November. This is March or February.
It's a one-year look back. So in November, when we start CUSAC, they're going to look back at this year. And it should have been done in September, so we're already
behind
the eight
ball. Is that a statutory
deadline? I believe so. I would have to look it up to see if it's actually statute or if it's guidance, but there are points for it in CUSAC.
I understand that, but if we don't have to do this now before there's a better explanation of this money and how it gets covered in future budgets, because I just think we're putting the cart before the horse here.
So if I may, in terms of the process, then you would make a motion to table that. Mm-hmm. So if you would like to make that motion, it seems like you should go for it.
All right, make a motion to table.
Second.
Hold on, I'm sorry. Either way you want. You can do all those in favor, or you can do a roll call. It's up to you.
So has the FF section been moved and seconded?
Yes.
Okay. So this is truly a motion to table, not a motion to pull it from the agenda. If it is a motion to table under Robert's rules, there's no discussion on the motion to table. It's been moved and seconded. You need to do a roll call vote.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. So we cannot.
So you're going to do, it's truly a motion to table. So you're going to do a roll call vote, and then we'll see what happens.
Could you explain what we mean by that?
Pardon me?
Could you explain what we mean by that? What are we agreeing to do? What is the motion?
So the entire FF agenda has been moved and seconded. So that's before the board for a vote. There's a motion to table one element of that FF 126. So if you don't want to act on that right now, you would vote yes. You're moving to take it out of the motion that's before the board. If you do want to act on 126, you would vote no on the motion to table. Is that procedurally clear to the members of the board?
We're voting on the motion to table first, even though the motions are
the entire section.
That's procedurally the way it's done. So that's why I wanted to make sure everyone understood procedurally where you are. Did I answer your question?
Yeah.
Okay. So you're going to do a roll call vote on the motion to table, which would, if it passes, would take this off of the list of things on which the board is acting this evening.
Okay. Dr. Brasher?
No.
Ms. Brooks?
Yes.
Ms. Emery?
No.
Ms. Grant?
Yes.
Dr. Grantham?
No.
Mr. Hornick?
No.
Ms. Kaltenbach?
No.
Dr. Rahimaki?
No.
Ms. Brennan?
No.
I'd like to put in the meeting minutes, please, that the board has voted no, but I believe that the board doesn't have a full understanding of these expenses and where they're going and how we're going to fund the budget for upcoming years, please.
Are we allowed to put that in, like, the request of?
Sure.
Thank you.
So now
the full, shall I, Madam President?
Yes, please.
Okay, so now the full FF agenda is before you, including that item. So voting yes on this agenda is a yes inclusively on 126. Obviously, individual board members can vote no or abstain if they choose to, but this whole agenda, FF, is now before the board.
Can we still ask questions even on FF 126?
We're still allowed to discuss?
No, you can, yes, no, the this motion is before you for consideration by the board, so if you still want to, if you have any questions as to the FF agenda, go right ahead.
If possible, I'd like to ask another question on this, because it's hard to hear completely. From my understanding, what I was hearing is if this money isn't spent, we're not able to keep all of this money to roll into next year.
Not as available funds to use for special education.
So that was my understanding. The $500,000 is for 3 years of retro pay. It's not $500,000 for every year moving forward, right? That's broken up over 3 years of retro pay.
We're not allocating a timeline to the number.
Well,
like,
no,
essentially,
I'm
this
just,
is just
yeah.
the number, and it's just to put away.
So, I mean, in an overall picture, because we don't know exactly when it will be settled.
Correct. Until we settle, we don't know exactly what the retro pay will be.
And we don't know if it's going to be the full $500,000, but it's just to make sure there's enough there if it does settle. Okay. So it's not.
Okay. So rather than discuss any numbers, I think the answer to the question is whatever settlement you reach, you will owe retro pay for 3 years.
Okay.
Which I think is the answer to your question without getting into any dollar figures.
That's exactly what I wanted. Thank you. I thought that I wanted to make sure because it's difficult to hear what you hear sometimes.
Sorry about that. I should have been more forward, sitting forward instead of.
And then also, retro pay increases salary moving forward past the time frame that the MOA is agreed to, correct? Can you put that in the minutes, please, too?
Can I ask one follow-up question? This was just the line item number, right? This $511,000, and the assumption would be this would be inclusive of whatever number the 3 years is negotiated. But moving forward, we wouldn't anticipate and I don't know if this is an executive session or not, but we wouldn't necessarily anticipate $511,000 of increased salary over the next X years. Would that make sense? Or is that an executive session?
Yeah, what troubles me is we're talking about, we're using the number, right? $511,000 in retro pay. We don't know what the number would
right.
be. I'll do math so simple even a lawyer can understand it, which is that you would expect the increase in your salaries going forward to be approximately one-third of whatever the amount of the retro pay you owe, but I don't think the board should be using numbers in a public discussion.
Thank you for that clarification.
No, and these numbers are the numbers that we received. Yes. They are not numbers that we came up with. They are being allocated to this line item.
Exactly. It's just line item numbers.
Right.
And yes.
We would anticipate. Aid number, not
correct.
Calculation of the executive session.
Yes.
And that's
correct.
What
that's
I'm
the extraordinary.
To.
Exactly.
Yes.
So, and just to confirm, the thought would be approximately one-third of whatever the retro pay would be used moving forward for salaries. As veto.
That's a rough approximation, right? Whether it's 28% or 38%, we have no idea. But I don't want to tie it to number.
Yep.
It's just
yep.
whatever it is, it's 3 years of retro pay. So it would be an adjustment going forward of approximately one-third of whatever that number is.
And compounded, which is...
Yes. Any other questions? Roll call vote.
Dr. Brasher?
Yes.
Ms. Brooks?
Yes, but I will abstain on action 20FF-126 due to my insufficient understanding.
Ms. Emery?
Yes.
Ms. Grant?
Yes, on all except for 20FF-126 for insufficient information to support that resolution.
And is that a no or an abstain?
That is a no.
Dr. Grantham?
Yes.
Did you say yes?
Mr. Hornick?
Yes.
Ms. Kaltenbach?
Yes.
Dr. Rahimaki?
Yes.
Ms. Brennan?
Yes. We are moving on to personnel. We have 28 action items. There are new lunch and recess monitors, teaching assistants, custodians, special education teacher, and leave replacements. We are also approving sports advisors and coaches and a change in job description for the purchasing coordinator. I am looking for a motion for 20P181 through 20P208.
Motion.
Was that you, Beth?
It's me.
Thank you.
I think it's through 207.
Was it 207? Did you change?
208.
I apologize. What is it? I have 208. Oh, no. I'm sorry. Yours has 208.
Maybe I printed it earlier than it's changed.
So then what is the one we are missing?
Yeah, I take something out maybe after I printed it.
Might be where we did the rescind or rescind. Maybe those were printed before. This one, 198, we had to rescind a prior motion before we can appoint for a different position. So 198 and 199.
So
I think that must have been printed earlier in the day.
Yeah.
So let's, Vito, can we combine those together since it's the same person?
This one was hired from the position before.
Yes. Yes.
Okay, great.
Kind of have to rescind that.
So we can move those together. That's fine. That's 198.
Okay, so what are we are adding the rescind.
So for action item,
what is it on yours?
198, We are, it's a motion to rescind prior motion 20P162, naming Jennifer Petito as teaching assistant, effective January 28th, 2020 through June 30th, 2020. And then we are making a motion to approve Jennifer Petito for the position of leave replacement teacher for employee 498-1062, FTE1, Step G, BA, with an annual salary of $55,830 to be prorated based upon an effective date February 19th, on or about May 1st, 2020. And we're combining those together into 198.
So do we have to move it differently again, Vito? Because move this all differently?
Does that need to be
since
moved
we just combined?
So whoever made the motion, whoever made the motion can simply accept that as a friendly amendment if they so choose, but there's nothing wrong
I
with
do so accept.
Thank you.
Did we get a second?
Did we get a second? I don't believe we got a second. A second?
I'll second.
Discussion. Questions?
Question on 201. Just with the salary, the annual amount of $60,000, should that be prorated at all?
Yes, that's the annual salary, so it's prorated. Prorated with an effective date of March 1st, 2020 through June 30th, 2020. I'll be sure that the minutes more clearly reflect that.
In 20P188, one name is bolded, one is not. Is there a reason for the differentiation, or is that just a typo?
I'm sorry, what number?
188.
I'm sorry, can we slide the microphone down? I cannot hear anything anybody is saying. Thank you.
There is a...
Okay, I just
want to... they're both bolded online.
I'm sure they're both bolded online.
Okay.
And then 20P-190, this is for new teachers to pay current teachers in the district or tenured teachers in the district for mentorship as per the contract, correct?
Yes, I can answer that. That's part of NJ Chief. Teachers are required to have a mentor teacher, depending upon what part of that cycle they may be in when they come to the district. They may have more or less time to fulfill, and these are all these amounts are set by the state.
Yep.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. And then one last question in this section. P-193, I see coaches here. Do they all have experience in these areas of specific sports, or?
Yes, all of these people have the years of experience are listed on here. They have their backgrounds and their positions currently in the district. Some of these are PE people. Some have experience in the actual sport themselves and in coaching.
Additional questions? We're going to roll call vote.
Dr. Brasher?
Yes.
Ms. Brooks?
Yes.
Ms. Emery?
Yes.
Ms. Grant?
Yes.
Dr. Grantham?
Yes.
Mr. Hornick?
Yes.
Ms. Kaltenbach?
Yes.
Dr. Rahimaki?
Yes.
Ms. Brennan?
Yes. Policy, there's only one item this evening. It's a second reading of the policy 8130 school organization. I'm looking for a motion for 20PO01, or 11, I'm sorry.
Motion.
Second?
Second.
Discussion, anyone have a question about this one policy? Okay, vote please.
Dr. Brasher?
Yes.
Ms. Brooks?
Yes.
Ms. Emery?
Yes.
Ms. Grant?
Yes.
Dr. Grantham?
Yes.
Mr. Hornick?
Yes.
Ms. Kaltenbach?
Yes.
Dr. Rahimaki?
Yes.
Ms. Brennan?
Yes. Okay. We're on to curriculum. There are three items for curriculum. We have field trips for our first, third, and eighth graders, as well as the Golden Eagle Singers, as well as two student teacher placements. I am looking for a motion for 20 CUR 36 through 20 CUR 38. Ms. Kaltenbach? Second?
Second.
Ms. Brasher? Or Dr. Brasher, I apologize. Discussion, any questions? Okay, we're gonna go on to roll call vote.
Dr. Brasher?
Yes.
Ms. Brooks?
Yes.
Ms. Emery?
Yes.
Ms. Grant?
Yes.
Dr. Grantham?
Yes.
Mr. Hornick?
Yes.
Ms. Kaltenbach?
Yes.
Dr. Rahimaki?
Yes.
Ms. Brennan?
Yes. There's not an update for the negotiations, and we'll move on to old business.
We've covered.
The HVAC.
HVAC. You cannot stay. We'll follow up that on the work session on our March 9th. Okay. Any other old business of the board? Moving on to new business, the creation of the charter position.
We have the creation position for public, discuss the, and then the appointment would be executive session. Do you want me to?
I'm going to turn this over to the business administrator to talk about the creation of the treasurer position.
So in the past, the treasurer's reports were done by someone in the business office. It's been a variety of different people from what I understand through the years. And most recently, it was being done by the company. I don't remember the name of the company. I apologize. Michael's company. What's the company called? One of his staff members was doing our treasurer's report. And in the course of just going through all of the accounts and looking at the reports and the transactions, we have called the Heidi, our auditor, to come in and take a look at a few things and just help us sort a few things out. And it has been her recommendation, her strong recommendation, that we have a treasurer who is outside of the district, which is common practice for the majority of districts. It's highly unusual to have someone in-house doing them. So at this time, we're looking to have a discussion, answer your questions if you have any, as far as the treasurer position. The role of the treasurer would be to receive the monthly, we would reconcile the reports in-house in terms of making sure all of the deposits that are on the bank statement are recorded in our accounting system. We would verify that the checks that are on the bank statement are, which are outstanding, and like you would do a normal reconciliation. And then for all of our accounts, they would then go to the treasurer along with some reports from payroll, and then she does the bank reconciliation form, signs it that you all see every month and approve. So that would be the role of the treasurer.
Has there been a problem with the in-house, the way we've done it before?
There have been some inconsistencies that she's identified and has requested, strongly recommended, that we move it outside and get someone outside.
This one of the things, if I can add, Heidi mentioned that the checks and balances, it's good business practice to have an outside person do the treasury report. And did offer names of
separation of duties.
Duties and local people that it's easily accessed and that's somebody we can work with. Common practice.
So what's the cost associated with this? Sorry.
For our size budget, it would be approximately $6,000 for the year.
$6,000?
And that's something we can discuss.
Is there a job description or something that we would set up, and what sort of...
There's a job description in the folder already for you to take a look at.
Okay.
And we can talk about it when we go back.
What sorts of qualifications would we be looking for in this person? Just basic accountancy, or is there some kind of a
state
standard?
It's generally a former BA, a retired business administrator with a number of years experience, and someone who has been doing it at other schools, so that we can get references and ensure that they're timely and accurate.
And they would have access to the numbers, but not to the money?
They would not have access to the money. They would not have access to our systems. They would be given reports, and then they would create the treasurer's report based off of several different reports from different sources that we would supply.
And the number of hours here doesn't require benefits, correct?
Definitely not.
$6,000 for the year?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Is that $6,000 that we've been spending already because Michael's company was billing us for that, or this is $6,000 in addition to what we were?
To be honest, I don't know the answer to that, but I can find out for you.
My guess is prior to Michael, it was all done in-house, so it wasn't, you know, and Michael was part-time too, so you have the added expense of a full-time BA now and then a treasurer, plus Benny's for the BA as well.
Mr. Hornick, did you have a question?
Oh, okay. I have new business that's around to that section. Is that new business stuff?
Yes.
So I have several items in new business. Address this question to Lana. We used to have a first recognition of the public in the beginning of the meeting for agenda items only. And back in 2012, the board changed it and we moved up first recognition of the public right after that. There was a lot of feedback from members of the public who didn't have comments and questions on the agenda in particular, that they'd have to sit and wait for all business of the board to occur before they could approach the microphone and speak with the board. There were many times in the past where things that they brought up could potentially impact the agenda without us even knowing or without them even knowing. From a process perspective, if they could come out and speak to us earlier than later in the meeting, it was moved so that we could have three public comment sections. So I was just curious as to why it was removed and who removed it.
I believe it was removed when a couple things changed over when we started with a new business administrator who does things in her way. So she creates the agenda. She created the agenda to begin with, the first one. And when there was no, I don't want to say direction, there was direction. When she created it with how she makes her agendas from previous practice and other districts, and that's how she created it. When I came on, I didn't necessarily have a problem with only two public comment sections. I believe we're only actually required to have one, so I am glad that we have the two, the one at the beginning to allow people to talk on agenda items, and then the one at the end for anything additional.
We've used it before, and people have used it, you know, after the on agenda items only. Very often people will come on non-agenda items and speak, and so I'm just wondering if we could potentially consider bringing it back, because it just gives the voice of the public, you know, another opportunity to come up and speak earlier in the meeting versus having to wait.
Can I ask, is there a reason to differentiate the two? Is there a reason they're broken up? Could there just be one in the beginning? I don't know the answer from a procedural.
I think in the policy it states agenda items, but I'm not sure. I haven't read it.
Yeah, I don't know.
We can look into that. 100% look into why we have differentiated previously.
Yeah, I think just one.
Because then people don't have to wait until the end. Right? And it might influence what's on the agenda, which it has in the past. So I just.
Yeah, I think it's a great point. I think it's a very good point.
So just to clarify, I'm sorry. So I want to make sure that I reflect it correctly in the minutes. You're asking for a third public comment to discuss.
Or if we can combine, like Kate's saying.
Discuss non-agenda items or have the first be for whatever. Either or.
We should take a look at the policy, see what the policy has to say of what we're supposed to follow. And if it says agenda items only, we could easily just continue with what had been done in the past or combine both like Kate's recommending. But I just think to have people sit and wait, I mean, what time is it now?
I agree.
You know, it's almost 9 o'clock. Absolutely. We're not through the whole agenda yet. And
so you want to discuss them earlier is what you're saying. That's basically the goal to
allow them
an opportunity.
Okay. Yeah, and even if we could do it like back to back, at least.
Like we did before.
Yeah.
Okay. I just want to make sure I understand.
People get
for the minutes to properly reflect.
The other question I have is, we are piloting a board of the whole, and the purpose was to allow people to hear what the board is doing and how we're making decisions. We are not recording that session, and I think that's a huge mistake. You know, if we want to be transparent, if we want to, you know, be accountable, we want the people to understand how and why we're making our decisions, I don't understand why we're not recording that. All of our public sessions for in perpetuity, well, I shouldn't say in perpetuity, for at least 12 years have been recorded. So if we could record that, then people could access it. I mean, that's when the work of the board sometimes really gets done. It may not be repeated here, and therefore, you know, we should probably give the public an opportunity to listen to it. Right now, they're not getting that, and the meeting minutes are not very specific and detailed, so I think we should potentially think about recording that session.
I think that's a conversation everyone has to, yeah, like...
Right, I'm just throwing it out there.
I apologize, I'm not feeling well, but... So talking is hard lately, and hearing is hard. So what are people's thoughts?
You know, I don't have a problem with recording it.
I don't have a problem recording it. I mean, I think there was some feedback at the last meeting in discussing the Board of the Whole that people felt like they were inhibited by making it public, and so not recording it was a compromise idea to not have those words be recorded in perpetuity to be used. I don't have a problem with it being recorded, but if, I mean, that was what we were trying to accomplish.
Mrs. Brooks, is that what you said?
I said that I had concerns about my ability to be 100% candid when there's an audience present. And that applies whether there's a camera officially on us, whether there's a recording device officially on us, or whether somebody's recording us with their phone, or whether somebody just walks out of here. You know, it doesn't, I don't think that it changes the level of my concern to be recorded, because, you know, it might help me, because, you know, if I say something and somebody who's sitting here takes it out of context, I can go back to the recording and say, you took it out of context, you know. But, I think that doesn't change how I feel about being inhibited. I know it's hard to believe, but I do. I mean, as a member of the public myself, I think I would prefer that if we're going to be doing these meetings in public and they can't make it, that they have something that they can refer to. Because I agree that the meeting minutes that we provide, understandable, you can't put down every word that we say. But if they want clarity, there's nowhere for them to go but to bug Lana or bug Michelle, and I think they get bugged enough. So if we have the recording, maybe we'll save everybody a little bit of angst. Just a thought.
What is the level of effort involved in recording and uploading? Is there any additional effort on that?
I think that I can answer to that. It requires me to ask an employee to stay beyond their normal work hours. They do that during a board meeting, and so that's a given that we started over the last year to have them present, because when they're not present, technical issues happen, you know,
okay.
It's Murphy's Law. I mean, they can certainly set up the recording device and we can run it, and then I don't have to ask them to stay. If we're comfortable with that, that mm-hmm. would be fine.
Okay.
We can give it a try.
Yeah.
They say it's as easy as pushing a button, so we'll find out.
I don't have any concerns about it being recorded. I've consistently gotten feedback from fellow parents that they would like our meetings to be available in other formats. I mean, people would love them to be live streamed is the feedback that I've heard. So mm-hmm. I think recording them would be a nice, yep. Can't get all the way to live streaming maybe, but we could at least record them.
You guys on there, good?
No problem with that.
Yeah.
Okay, so we will move forward with our next
thank you.
Work session.
I also have another question. I've been reading the superintendent's board brief, and one of the items on that is the, she reports that she meets with the leadership of the board on a weekly basis.
I apologize, that is a confidential brief.
But I'm not, can you report out to the board confidentially what you're talking about? Because we have no idea.
Just can comment on that document's a confidential board.
That's fine.
Did you have any additional questions? We're going to move on to the second recognition of the public.
I wanted to talk. I went to a conference on Valentine's Day. For social emotional learning, there was a presenter, was the first the keynote speaker was a man named Ian Hockley, and Dylan's Wing of Change. He was a Sandy Hook father. Was probably one of the most powerful speakers I've ever seen. I would highly recommend. He's doing amazing things with children and leadership and looking at mental health aspects. They also had a representative from the State Department of Ed who announced that last Tuesday, Governor Murphy in Trenton has said they are going to pay for one staff member from every school district in New Jersey to be trained in mental health first aid. And they were going to take that where that person will then be able to train others in the district, which I thought was a really great idea, and I hope it follows through. Arts Ed New Jersey was there, Rock and Roll Foundation Forever was there, talking about the importance of arts in the curriculum and the importance of arts teachers of every level, reminding everyone that they're the ones who see the same students year after year, not just one year. And how the arts can connect students on emotional levels and bring their learning up to another level. And it led to a great discussion. There was a superintendent from the Northeast New Jersey district. They were talking about the LGBTQ curriculum coming out and enrolling and mixing it all up in curriculum. But he said at their district, what they've been doing to try to model for people who might come to the meetings and feel left out, and people are worried about saying the wrong things, they've actually stopped referring to each other as Mr. Jones, Mrs. Jones, but Board Member Jones and Board, you know. And it was just a really nice, great movement. There was a lot of people from all over the state there. And they finished the day with somebody who talked about making sure to take time for yourself at the end of the day and self-care, because if we're working with students or working with anybody every day, to be able to make sure you're in the best spot and not carrying too many pounds of extra baggage. So they're going to offer, I think, three more this year, they said. And I have links I can share with you guys if you'd like to see the information. It was a really great presentation.
If you could share those, that would be great. Thank you.
Dr. Conate, the governor passed a new mandate for arts recently.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Do you have a sense yet of the impact financially and from a structure of how we deliver education here, how that's going to impact what we do? So the governor recently passed a new set of mandates for an arts program. And so we're just wondering where we were in exploring the impact on curriculum and time in the classroom and finances and things like that.
So we're in the beginning stages of taking a look at that. There are a number of curricular areas, I have to say, that are going to come across to us to expand on. I would say that curriculum probably will not have the largest impact, but we're still at the beginning stages. I will tell you that the social studies curriculum will have the largest impact. That will be the biggest change. And people get nervous when you start shifting units because everybody likes particular units, and those are always favorites for the kids. And so there'll be a little bit of shuffling around on those. So that'll be our largest impact.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
I did get to attend the Round Valley Chorus Concert last month, and it was very well done. The kids all did a wonderful job.
Can you speak up, please?
Yeah, could you?
I'm sorry. I attended the Round Valley Chorus Concert, and it was really great. The kids did a really great job. I believe you attended too, right?
Yes.
Yeah. And they very impressive for third, fourth, and fifth graders, so it was nice.
Very good. It was very good.
Was the camp thing?
Yeah, it was awesome.
Awesome.
Yeah. Excellent.
Yeah, good. It was very good. Very well attended. I was really impressed with it.
We signed up right when we were there. So
right.
It was a very successful event.
The only problem I have with it is I can't sign up.
I did get a report out that there were about 150 families who attended, so much that they ran out of copies, so that's always a good sign when you run out of copies. It was a wonderful initiative, grassroots. Danielle Nugent started that, lots of support from the staff, and very much needed by our parents. So that we're hoping for that to be an annual event. So getting larger and larger. And I actually had people reach out to me, other superintendents, to say, oh, hey, next year we'd like to send somebody, where can we, you know, join you? So that was a very successful event. So we thank the staff.
I'm going to move on to the second recognition of the public. We're going to follow the same parameters of the 3-minute speaking rule and so that we can proceed in time and manner. Please, each person will have 3 minutes, and please come up to the microphone, state your name and address. We will limit this time to 30 minutes.
Hi, my name is Colleen Caballero, Canterbury Lane, Lebanon. I just want to talk about the minutes because I think it's really important, the transparency that we're trying to establish in the district. So being a former colleague of my teachers, being a parent, being an educator, working in a district, we have board meetings twice a month, and I think it makes a big difference to have that open line of communication. I had a student teacher at Reddington, and she said, oh, I want to come to one of your board meetings. So she came, and she sat, and she said, I need the minutes. And so we went online, and there were no minutes. And I know that we had a changeover with BA, but I think that's really important, is the consistency and having that open public communication, whether it be the minutes, the audio, and then it be up recent, because it definitely gives more transparency. It also gives a common line of communication between the community, the parents, the teachers, and even students. So I just want to say thank you for that we're talking about this as an open policy. Also, the fact that we have 2 board meetings, I think that's really exciting for our district. So, thank you.
Hello again. Kevin Malloy, David Post Road, Annandale. A few points. First, as respects transparency, I'm glad Ms. Grant and others spoke up about recording the second session. Quite frankly, the reasoning behind not originally recording it, because we wanted to avoid people speaking in candor, is possibly the worst kind of logic I can imagine. We want candor and we deserve it. That's what transparency is, speaking candor in public and having your thoughts recorded. Secondly, with regards to the elimination of one of the public speaking sessions, very surprised by you, Madam President, one, saying that it wasn't your idea, and then saying, two, you didn't really have a problem with it, because before you were on this board, you might have been the member of this district who spent the most time availing herself to public comment. So that's not a good look. So I would recommend that comes back. Third, I have a couple of direct questions for the BA. On February 3rd, Ms. Morris, I submitted an OPRA request for any copies of any fact finder recommendations or findings. You did write back, and you wrote that document was confidential. I replied that according to PERC, that document not only is not confidential, it must be made public within 10 days of its receipt, and then you then replied that the document does not exist. So I'm asking on the record, why change your answer? Have you received anything from the fact finder?
Do you answer?
We do not have the document. We have not received it.
You have nothing from the fact finder?
Correct. Oops, sorry, that wasn't you. Sorry.
But now that we understand on the record, when you do receive it, it will be published within 10 days of receipt, consistent with recommendation.
Yes.
Yes.
Outstanding. Thank you all. Have a great night.
My name is Barbara Yule, and I have 3 children in the school district. One of them is at the middle school. I've heard a declining interest in the school-run after-school activities, and the research shows the importance of those activities, especially for middle school, for fostering friendships, driving self-confidence and having a sense of belonging. So the problem with those after-school activities is they end at 3:30. So they require parents pick up at 3:30. So for any families where both parents work full-time, that's really a challenge. So there's other school districts nearby, such as Bridgewater or even Hopewell, that have a middle school at a late bus for the middle schoolers. Now, I understand the cost may be a concern, of course they're concerned. So school districts like Bridgewater actually require that the parents of children that use the late bus contribute to the cost. So I'm asking, if we're putting children first, I'm asking for the school board to look into how a late bus for the middle schoolers could be put into place and the impact it would help place on the district and help the kids. Thanks.
Thank you. I'm seeing no additional comments, so we will move on to executive session.
Sorry.
No problem.
Okay. The Senator Byron M. Barr Open Public Meetings Act, NJSA 10:4-6 et sec, requires all meetings of the Clinton Township Board of Education to be held in public. NJSA 10:4-12b sets forth 9 types of matters that may lawfully be discussed in executive session, i.e. without the public being permitted to attend. And whereas the Clinton Township Board of Education has determined that the following issues are permitted by NJSA 10:4-12b to be discussed without the public in attendance and shall be discussed during an executive session. Whereas the nature of the matters to be discussed described as specifically as possible without undermining the need for confidentiality, reviewing hearing information before the board pursuant to NJSA 18A:37-13.2 et sec, matters subject to the attorney-client privilege, personnel, and collective bargaining contract negotiations. Whereas the length of executive session is estimated to be 90 minutes, after which the meeting shall reconvene and proceed with business. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the Clinton Township Board of Education will go into executive session for the above stated reasons. Be it further resolved that the board hereby declares that its discussion of the aforementioned subject will be made public at such time as the reason for confidentiality no longer exists. Action may be taken upon return.
Looking for a motion?
Motion.
Motion.
I'm
right. Second?
Second?
Scott.
You can do first and second.
I'll just do both.
We'll change our course.
Just do both.
It's
going to change.
And it's 9:03?
Yes. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? Going to executive session.
Okay.
I'm going to reconvene back to public session. I'm looking for a motion.
Motion.
Second?
Second.
Allison and Jennifer. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? Back in public session.
What time do we have?
I have 10:11. So we have 4 agenda item motions that we're going to include. Right?
Yes, they're
right here.
Yep.
Okay, thank you. I'm going to read all of them first, and then we will vote at the conclusion. We have 20P208, motion to approve creation of the position of treasurer of school monies as presented. 20P209, motion to approve
Judy Favino.
Judy Favino for the position treasurer of school monies at a rate of $500 per report or $6,000 annually, effective immediately. 20P210, motion to approve a stipend for Marianne Stokes to perform a reconciliation project at a fee of $39.30 per hour, not to exceed 30 hours. And 20FF130, Motion to approve CFM Construction of Sterling, New Jersey for pressure testing of forced main and for manhole abandonment at 6 Charlotte Drive for $10,000 even. Roll call vote. I'm looking for a motion.
Motion.
Second?
Second.
Awesome. Any questions, discussion? Okay, roll call vote, please.
Dr. Brasher?
Yes.
Ms. Brooks?
Yes.
Ms. Emery?
Yes.
Ms. Grant?
Yes.
Dr. Grantham?
Yes.
Mr. Hornick?
Yes.
Ms. Kaltenbach?
Yes.
Dr. Rahimaki?
Yes.
Ms. Brennan?
Yes.
So moved.
Thank you. Now I am going to look for a motion for adjournment.
Motion.
Second. We have Mary Beth and Allison. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? We are out of public session.